Well, we've made pretty good progress, actually. We're in Ecclesiastes 8. And we're talking about this, that the king's word has power. And we got, and that was verse, what, 8 or something? Or, no, verse... Yeah, verse 4. And so, I tried to talk yesterday about this idea of what we talked about, him being manifest in the flesh but justified in the spirit, and why that was so important. And let me try to approach it from a different direction, because we always try, especially in our own minds, we always try to justify whatever it is that we're doing by some... We have to justify it to ourselves or to others, or mostly to ourselves. And as long as we're doing that, then we by definition have to compare. You understand that? We talked about not comparing. And so, because if we compare, then we end up, you know, we just end up in another prison by constantly comparing. And so think about this from the standpoint of Jesus Christ. He was conceived by the Holy Spirit. And then from the time, all evidence indicates, from the time of his conception and birth until his baptism, that he didn't, there was nothing about what was happening in him, to him and about him, that could justify who he was by the flesh. You know, we try to make him into a champion kind of guy, and whatever idolatry, we try to make him fit that. But there was nothing, you know, if people could see it, the scriptures would have justified it. But there was no evidence that he was who he was, that he, who he would be, or who he still, who he was, and what, I mean, was, is, and will be. And so the first time that we have, that he had some real manifestation that he was on the right path and that everything was right, was at his baptism. That's the first time that he heard the voice of God, if we believe the scriptures. And let's go there real quick, because it's real important. If we can capture this, we'll stop trying to listen to our mind or our... Matthew 3.
The mind is a terrible thing to listen to.
What?
The mind is a terrible thing to listen to.
Yeah. And you should know.
That's why I skipped it. Matthew what?
In verse chapter 3, Jesus has just been baptized. And verse 17, and lo, a voice from heaven saying, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Then the second time was right. When was when? Do anybody remember when the second time was? Transfiguration. Let's go there, Matthew 17.
I'm sorry, Matthew 4?
17. Verse 5. The transfiguration has just taken place. They're discussing about building tabernacles and stuff. While he yet spake, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them. And behold, a voice out of the cloud which said, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear you him. Now, when's the next? Anybody remember the third time?
On the cross.
Let's go to John 12. The Greeks had just come and said they want to see Jesus. It's Passover. We think the Greeks that we're talking about are, anyway, whoever they are. And so now, he said, he just got through saying in verse 27, "Now is my soul troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this cause came I into this hour. Father, glorify thy name." And then came a voice from heaven saying, "I have both glorified it and will glorify it again." The people, therefore, that stood by and heard it said that it thundered. Others said an angel spoke to him. As far as I know, those are the only three times that Jesus heard audibly the voice of God. Nobody, the other people didn't hear him. If they did, they thought it thundered or something. Now, why is that so important? We want to believe that there was a microphone in Jesus' ear and God was telling him what to do every second. Because that's what, if you listen to modern theology, that's what really, they act like that's going on with them.
That wouldn't be walking by faith.
It wouldn't be faith. And so the whole idea of faith can never be justified by what we see.
The point I think is good, but why would we presume that he never heard from him another time just because it's not recorded? What leads you to that conclusion?
Because we don't know. I just believe that. But the reason I believe that is that he had to perfect faith. And if there was anything else, go over here and now go do this, and do that, then there would be no faith because he wouldn't have been in the position of ignoring his own ideas. He would have been trying to get it right.
Plus, it says in the scriptures in multiple places, he took upon him the form of a man. He's encompassed about with the same infirmities that we are. I think it makes it pretty clear that he walked through the world as a man.
No, I agree totally. But
if he was in constant contact with somebody on another planet through an earpiece, that's not...
Yeah, there was no Peter Popoff phenomenon about the earpiece in his ear getting instructions on
it. I don't understand what you mean by perfecting faith. There's two words, perfecting faith. I don't know what that means.
The word perfect means to bring to the... It means fully tested. It's the Greek word teleos. That means fully tested. And so the faith, his faith, became fully tested and then ultimately tested on the cross. But it had to be fully tested against all of the temptations, all of the... Remember, we've talked about you can't be tempted to... You can only be tempted with something that you know you possess. And so, as we've talked about many times, that's why Jesus healed. He healed, relatively speaking, a few people. But he did, and that's why he raised people from the dead, because he had to know that he possessed that power in order to empty himself of it, so that the test or the process of perfecting the faith would be complete. Am I speaking another language? What happened to you when you're...
I was bitten in my sleep by some animal in the house.
If he's got short shorts on, you can see.
And it hurts.
It's probably fatal.
Don't you feel bad?
No. this is so hard to talk about because we don't have any frame of reference for it. You've heard me talk over the years that I was never tempted to give up being a quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys or even for the Wicked Bird, whatever. I was, because I had no possession in that arena. You understand me? Okay. I was tested in terms of whether or not I'd become a televangelist, because I was able to do that kind of thing, and electron, man, that's the last thing I want to do. So the point of each of us can only be, you're not going to be tested by something you don't possess, because the test is whether or not you will empty of it or whether or not you're going to think God's going to use it. And this is the thing that's going on now. We have all these things. People say, oh, God's going to use your talents or use your celebrity. We're going to make Jesus famous. Or because Deion Sanders or somebody accepted Jesus, it's going to make a whole bunch of other people accept him. In effect, what we are constantly trying to do is sell our faith, talk somebody else into believing it, to justify our own unbelief.
In the flesh.
You understand? We want to have an evidence that we believe.
To me, what the thing about, I don't know how the verse goes, but it talks about from glory to glory, from faith to faith.
From faith to faith and glory to glory.
There are moments, mountaintop moments, if you will, where you know that you know that you know. Everything is perfect, it's clear. God's in his heaven and all's right with the world, and there's just no question about it.
And there was no reason for it.
And 5 minutes later, everything's turned to shit.
Or vice versa.
You go from the mountaintop to the valley, back to the mountaintop, and there's no predicting it. And the question is, between the mountaintop experiences, is faith manifest?
Right. And again, this is why the Harry guys are considered one. Because Harry...
time between the mountaintops.
Harry cannot... ever, he can't hide it. If he's really happy, he's all blah blah blah. And if he's really upset about something, he can't hide it. But Harry, the other Harry, is his evil twin, because he can always put on a face. You can always act like it's okay, except for very rare occasions.
I was thinking this morning. I got up real early. I guess I was in my meditation time, my quiet time or whatever, and I was thinking this morning that I was thinking, the thought came to me as what impact or what difference has I made in other people's lives? And I was thinking, like, I was feeling like, nothing, and I got really disappointed and sad about that, and I was thinking, I need to do something to make impact in other people's lives or make a difference or something.
But that's exactly what. You need other people, and all of us do, if we're honest with ourselves. We need other people to justify our own, to prove to ourselves that we believe. In other words, we have to have some evidence of our faith.
Yeah.
And God says, no. Because if there's evidence of your faith, there's no faith. And if there's evidence of your faith, and if that was the intent, then faith would become a commodity for your own self-realization. But this is why. This is the bottom line. It has always, this thing about being manifest in the spirit, manifest in the flesh, but justified in the spirit, at the bottom line has to do, because if he were manifest in the flesh and justified in the flesh, then all these people that are trying to sell him would be right. Talk people in, trying to, convince you that your life's going to be so much better if you come to Jesus. No, it's not.
And here's how to do it.
Right, and then here's how to do it. And that won't work either, because God's going to mock you.
But that's why I came to Jesus.
And so the whole point of this is, the why, is that just as Jesus was not justified in the flesh, he was manifest in the flesh, but not justified in the flesh, so we can never be justified in the flesh. We're manifest in the flesh, in him, but we're justified only by the Father. Now, the way, and that has to have some guidelines, and it has to have some things, and that's why it has to be according to the Word. There can't, you can't do anything that violates the Word, but then it needs other witnesses. So that, but you can, the witnesses have to be not the witnesses that were mine once. Oh, we got great crowds, and we had 60,000 conversions, or we had, look at all the money the people are sending, or we certainly don't have any of that. What is it then? What is it? What is the final point? What is the evidence that you believe?
Peace that passes understanding.
That's internally.
What? Peace.
What do you say? What it says, the evidence. Am I making sense?
It always blindsides you. It always sneaks up on you. It's in the place not sought after. It's the thought not desired. It's at your mother's funeral or something. Who knows what it is? But it's not what you think. What you think? If you think it is, it's not.
That's why I've said, if you think we're doing something right, you can be assured we're not. If you think you're doing something for God, you can be assured you're not. If you think that you're a disciple, you can be assured you're not.
That's how it's always, that way I said, we're always looking outside of ourselves for justification or to bring us up or to bring us down or something other than by comparing makes
right.
us something. Something
it's comparison. Something it's all
bad.
It is. And the comparing makes us, if you say it, those that compare are not wise. They don't possess the wisdom of God. Now, your question about, you know, again, what have I ever done? What does my life mean? Blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, now let's look and see, and somebody whose meaning, life has great meaning. Who do you think has life's had great meaning? Name one. By your standards. You can't. But anyway, to me, the person that has had the most impact on my life that it was somebody and something no one will ever hear of. It's Shannon. That little helpless baby has had more impact on my life than anybody else that I've ever met. There are no champions in the kingdom of God. The evidence isn't made public. Can't be.
This reminds me of our conversation about the lady that worked in the mental asylum.
Worried
about those people's minds.
Well, that was one of our listeners.
Yeah.
She wrote to the morning Bible study questions or whatever it is, and her question was: she works with people that are mentally ill, and I thought that we had a lot in common. But I'm sorry, that was a cheap shot. But she works especially, I think, with children, wasn't it? Anyway, and so it was troubling her how and what value do the mentally ill have in the kingdom of God, and or to her or something, I can't remember the question, but and it's a very good question, because it is the same value that everything else has, to show that you don't need mental acuity, you don't need to be able to read, you don't need to be able to do anything to be of value to God. And I used, you and I talked, I used Shannon as that example.
Yeah, I wrote her and told her about Shannon. And the whole thing was that none of us ever know what value we are to God.
But the point of it is, our value is, if Paul's, when he said, be a follower of me, Paul was an abject failure at the time. Everybody left him. Everybody. Three different times. Even his closest associates testified against him in the court when Nero, when he had to go before Nero. And yet he said, be a follower of me. Why? He certainly wasn't justified in the flesh. He was manifest in the flesh and justified in the spirit, and he stayed faithful to that. And I promise you, if this can apprehend you, then you'll be freer than you ever dreamed of being free. That you never will have an outward, a sensory justification for your belief system, because it's between you and God. You can't prove it to me. You can't prove it to each other. The only thing we can do with each other, the evidence of whether or not, is whether or not we lay down our lives one for another. Because that's what this says.
That illuminates a lot of his statements about, I judge not even my own self.
Well, let's look at this, because we think that if you look and we think that, my God, the Bible is full of these orders and commands and to go out and share your faith. It's not. Let's look and see what it is. First of all, remember, every evangelist that went out at the time of Christ, I mean, the time of the New Testament, they went out because they were asked to go somewhere. And they were asked to go because they were asked to go to the synagogues at these various places all over the world, where these folks that had been there on Pentecost went back to their little synagogues and groups, and they needed help. They didn't. Nobody ever just decided, oh, I'm going to go. God has given me a vision for China, or God has given me a vision for something. They only went where they were asked to go. And they never, I challenge you to once try to find a place in the scriptures where anybody tried to sell or talk somebody into believing in God. Let's look at 1 Peter. This is what they did. Is this making sense? Otherwise, by definition, the selling, you first have to sell it because you have to convince yourself you believe. And then secondly, you have to have others believe so that you think, so that you they're the evidence that you believe. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's why we can never be justified in the flesh. We're manifest in the flesh. But as he is in this world, so are we. Are you going to 1 Peter?
I'm hearing loud and clear the one about he has no form or comeliness that when we see him we should desire him.
Right.
You can't sell that by definition.
I had a couple of telemarketing jobs.
The thing about Paul in this context, Paul was, he wouldn't call it selling, but he sure did testify, just witness.
He went where he was asked to come.
Sure, but when he did go and spoke, he had some pretty powerful things that would change people's way of thinking.
Because he preached the cross.
He preached
the gospel. He didn't preach how-tos. He didn't preach any how-tos.
Right.
He preached the death, your death, Christ's life.
Yeah.
1 Peter chapter 1. No. Did I say chapter 1?
Mm-hmm.
I was wrong.
2.
I'll find it. Just give me a second.
Okay.
1 Peter 3. Verse 14, happy, but, and if you suffer for righteousness' sake, happy are you. And be not afraid of their terror, neither be troubled. But sanctify the Lord God in your hearts, and be ready always to give an answer to every man that asketh you a reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. The Great Commission, you know, go you into all the world and preach the gospel. Any freshman Greek, it says it's in the aorist tense. That means it's as you go into the world. If you believe, you will speak. There's not one, oh, I'm going to go have a healing ministry. There's not one person that had a healing ministry in the Bible, because any gifts of the Spirit, if you possessed them, then they were gone. They were polluted. Oh, this is what I'm going to do. No, you're not. Oh, I'm going to go produce concerts for Jesus. No, you're not.
Well, there are people like that in the Scriptures, and they're called exorcists, and they're called sorcerers, and they're called magicians, and they do it for reward.
Well, and I'm not saying everybody that does that is wrong. That's not a major thing. I'm just saying for us, for me, for what I see, for what I have to say to you. Because I know that there have been times in the past, I'll say, when some of you wanted some kind of physical evidence that you believed.
Yeah. I thought I needed it.
He's manifest in the flesh, but justified in the Spirit. And as He is in this world, so are we. And if you ever come to the place where you think you need an evidence, and the prayer is, Father, show me again the mystery which has been hid from me. Show me your Son in me. And you can command Him to do that. That's the only time you can ever command God. You can command Him concerning about the things concerning His Son. So, again, I say to you, you know, it's from a spiritual standpoint, it's childlike. It's a childish thing to want evidence. It's like, Mommy, give me that candy bar to prove that you love me. And it's a childish thing to want to hear the bop coal or the voice of God. I promise you, you don't want to hear that. But those are all childish things, and you know, and that's fine. And it doesn't mean they're not saved and they're not sanctified. It just means they're children. What? Something's going on with Mr. Gary.
Well, I'm thinking about this. You know, as a child, you're treated differently as a child than you are as an adult.
Well, you don't make him an evangelist. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. From God's point of view, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a child.
No.
It's part of what happens. You know, it's the road. But at some point,
at a time when you should be teachers, you have again one that teach you which be the first principles of the doctrine of Christ.
Right.
Drawn from the breast and weaned from the milk. You don't need the milk of the Word. We need the strong meat of the Word. That's what sustains you. Just as adults, you can't drink very much milk after you become an adult. You have some kind of a enzymic reaction. Is that a word?
No.
What?
Enzymatic.
I don't know. But my point is that if to sustain us, we need the strong meat of Him.
Is something you chew yourself.
Right. The milk, you know, that's why Paul called the people as children, and they were getting their sustenance through him. I mean, as a mother gives the child the milk, it's pre-digested. But then he said, no more. So you don't need anything pre-digested from me. The only thing you need from me is to make fun of your idols. What?
Get busy.
What?
Nothing.
Did you really say that?
It was just a thought.
Huh?
It's just a thought, and you know what we think about thoughts around here.
He was just kidding. He wasn't serious.
Well, I thought it was an invitation.
Oh.
After hours here now.
All righty. Take a big guy.
Make my life so much easier.